Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
hello.
Hello, hello.
There you are. Hey there.
I'm there.
Okay. So what happened? You passed out? What happened?
Yes, sir. A lot of walking.
Well, walking's good for you.
Yeah, well, after so many miles.
Yeah. Well, your mother and I used to walk Brandywine. Was it 4 times was equal to 7 miles?
Yeah.
Do it in 2 hours?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So your package should arrive tomorrow. I do want to reinforce to you the 10th or something like that is when the Enterprise I have to
mm-hmm.
renew, and I need that card to renew with, so
mm-hmm.
pretty please.
Mm-hmm.
I also sent you a filled out form. I'm going to take a call here in 1 second.
Mm-hmm. What's tonight's topic?
All right.
Are we recording, Mr. Trevor?
Not yet. Go ahead and hit the recording button. Start.
I don't see that.
All right. You see at the dead center top, it says recording?
No. Interactive lecture.
What do you see?
Conference unlocked. 3 callers. I'm on the board.
You're on the board?
Right.
Okay. So go to the right, you got call in, then call out, and then recording. Are you on your phone?
I'm on the tablet.
All right, I'm going to start the recording. Why isn't the recording started? This is strange. Are you there, Martin?
I am here.
Well, this is supposed to be playing.
Well, the autopilot?
Yeah. Did you turn autopilot off?
I did, yes. Wasn't supposed to do that.
Not tonight. All right, so do your recording.
Okay. One more second here. You just One more moment here. Do you see the email where you sent me the disclaimer?
Yeah.
I understand. You just re-forward real quick to Gmail. Just turn right around and reset it.
I'm going to go pull it. Semper Paratus. Do you know what that is?
Always prepared.
Yep. Go. This is all being recorded right now.
A little bit of technical difficulty, folks. Bear with us. Got a nice, healthy crowd tonight.
Check your inbox.
I believe doing it to post into the other one as well. Here we go. All right. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everybody. welcome to another weekly evening installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight we are discussing, what are we discussing tonight, Mr. Edward?
Tonight is it's right there in the tonight is Mr. Slevin's LLC.
Okay.
But
very
that
good.
Doesn't
very
come
good.
Right at this point.
Yeah. All right. And so again, my name is Martin Michaels, and I'll be your moderator for this evening's conference call, brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may in any way, shape, or form be deemed by you to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely but firmly ask you to hang up the call, hang up your phone. We don't mean to sound rude now when we say this. We just want to express to everybody in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my suggestion to you, not advice, my suggestion would be to get an attorney or to get someone that your state sanctions to give advice in law. As for these calls, they're all just merely for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you, people's opinions, and nothing more. It's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. Go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly, some light housekeeping. First of all, I'd like to take everybody to the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, we'll see a little picture of the Constitution. You click on that, and you have two most important items pop up here in front of you. First, on the left, is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right beside it is the common law default process, nationally known for its high win rates in traffic cases throughout the country. That's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that's really not why it's here. The reason that we put it here is it acts as a perfect homework exercise, if you will, a real-life application on the jurisdictionary course that you would have just taken. And so for a lot of folks, this is their first time committing to action, And so they seem a little bit more willing to take that first step, probably because of the incredibly high success rate. And, you know, traffic is a common scenario that happens in this country. And, of course, it's not usually the most dire of circumstances. So folks feel a little bit more comfortable to exercise that. So it makes for a perfect pairing. You take the jurisdictionary course. You have your basic understanding. And then you exercise it out there with the common law default process. Both these items are very reasonably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default process with a contribution of $150. Also, on the subject of your remedies in the law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the home page of your remedy, you're met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site you're visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. We want you know, folks to see. We have multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects as well as many other features and study groups that is at Your Remedies in the Law. Now, YourRemediesInTheLaw.com is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you will do just that at your leisure. Do you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation? Just email me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com, or feel free to call 1-800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. All right, next up, Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member of this, please do sign up as well. Tell your friends and your family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's actually a very easy setup. You know, you click here. You put in your information, you click next, you click over there, put your information in, you click next. And once you put all your information in there and you're all done, it's going to ask you what your interests are, what are you most interested in. This could range anywhere from credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS matters, asset protection, and maybe it's veterans' rights or maybe personal health rights. Virtually anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal life in one way or another, you'll find the group that would belong to there in that list. And then once that's completed and everything is done, it puts it together probably much like you would think of a social network, but it's nothing like that. It's very custom. It's very private. And it puts you in contact with people in your local area or however large of a radius that you choose there that have common interests, that are interested in the same thing that you're interested in. And the idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. Now, of course, if you're in need of legal advice and or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. I mean, it's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe, for example, you jump online and you say, well, this happened to me today. The first person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that's fair. I don't think they should be able to do that. Okay, well, we appreciate your opinion. It's probably not going to probably help you very much, but you know, it's good. At least you know there's other folks that feel the same way that you do. But maybe the next person says, well, I mean, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go and watch these YouTube videos, and I'd look up these terms in my local law library and my local courthouse. Well, now we're getting warmer. Now we're starting to get a little more of something that's going to have an impact, something that might actually help you. Then maybe the next person jumps in and says, all those sound like great ideas. On top of that, I'd go and get the jurisdictionary course. I'd get to grab this course and that course. And I would jump on this call on this night. And, what now has happened is you've got people that are just giving their personal opinions
just putting their 2 cents worth in. But now, perhaps you're talking with people that have an experience in the same field that going through the same exact thing that you're going through now. They've already been there, and so you see where we're going with that. And so, grass fire communications, very, very powerful, very, very powerful tool, and we encourage you to jump on board with that. There's no cost for the use of that. All right. If none of that is an option for you, you've got freedomsradio.com. Maybe you're over the road with the process there of set up. We really want you to be able to have the option to be able to hear these calls. And so we give you freedomsradio.com. It's very simple. You just click on the register button. You enjoy the first 30 days for free. After that, it's affordable $10 a month through your credit card or through your PayPal. I don't know if you're aware, also, every single call is recorded. That's also a very, very powerful tool. You have years of archives to go through. So if you miss a call, you can always go back and check it out. Or if you're on a call and you hear a topic that you like, you can isolate that and hear hundreds and hundreds of calls, most likely, on that same exact topic. They can go back years and listen to a lot of wonderful stories to hear and people's opinions and things that have happened to them. Very, very entertaining, I can assure you. All right. Also, there's a question box there where you can type in a question there. Of course, on Freedoms Radio, as long as it's within the call hours, that written question will pop up on the moderator's screen, and we do our best to try to read those out. So you don't get to talk necessarily one-on-one with the information provider like you would by being a private member. But on Freedoms Radio, again, there's no cost. You don't have to pay the $10 a month. You just type in the question there. And as long as the time allows and it is appropriate and it's during that particular call, if we are able, we will surely read that question out. All right. Winding down a little bit here. This next portion is called your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedies in the law courts under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at your remedies in the law. This expense would be for that information provider, to have for themselves, along with any other expenses that would come with, whatever just a service that they're providing or whatever it is they're doing. So when you contact us, all we do is just simply listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own, just simply because they can't be found, not because you're not capable of looking somebody up. They can't be found. They've made it that way intentionally. And we put you in touch with them. We make the introductions. Not all the teaching efforts by the information provider now is always going to be successful. We aim for the best. We plan for the best, and we hope for the best. And of course, if you go to yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials, you'll see very quickly that we definitely aim to be successful. Not everything goes perfectly all the time, and so sometimes things happen in life, and when they do, we have to deal with them. But whatever agreement that you have with that information provider is directly between you and that information provider. And so, for example, if there was to be any talk of, let's say, a refund, it's a good moment here to segue into the, your remedy is in the law's refund policy. There is none. There's no refund policy with your remedy. If there was going to be a refund, it would be a very unique scenario. It would be very specific to you, and that would be between you and the information provider. In other words,
That would be a private discussion between the two of you. But really, folks, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you come on board with an information provider or you utilize any one of their services. All right. Lastly here, pertaining to all of the information providers at Remedies of the Law, we want to remind you that these speakers are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But it needs to be done properly and needs to be done politely. And please let's have respect for all of our speakers here on any of these calls. All right, so now without further ado, Mr. Edwards, are we going to?
Yes. Thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate your disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, once again, we have Mr. Slevin, and Mr. Slevin is going to be sharing with us the very fine points that it has to do with creating an LLC through his process, which enables you, if you are an employee, to now become a worker. Employees pay taxes. Workers work for companies like LLCs, etc., and this one particularly doesn't have a tax liability. Mr. Slevin's going to share with you tonight how that is. Also, the fact is that companies all across the country, throughout the world for that matter, are accustomed to dealing with LLCs. It's a no-brainer for them. It's very comfortable for them, and it's a way that you can rearrange your affairs in such a way that you've just reduced your tax liability to nip. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Mr. Slevin. Go ahead, buddy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How is everybody doing out there? We will now talk
about... We're all doing wonderful. How about you?
It's been a long day. But, hey, we're on top. Things are moving and grooving. And as one of my favorite... cartoon character, for lack of a better one, we be smoking. So, all right. So, we've gone through this process several times, and it's all in the archives, and I want to take one thing about how to read the statutes and how they are written. So there's a thing called statutory construction, the rules of statutory construction, and one of the main rules is that if in the legislation a word or phrase is defined as a term, then only that term definition can be used when reading that particular legislation. So we got selection here of some of these terms. This comes from the Internal Revenue Code, which is Title 26 of the United States Code. And it's Section 7701, subsection A, number one, person. The term person shall be construed to mean and include an individual, a trust, estate, partnership, association, company, or corporation, period. Did you hear anything about human beings there? Nope. And what is that individual? That is, an individual means one. One what? All right, so the term partnership says a term partnership includes an unincorporated organization. And we'll be talking later about LLCs. LLCs, when you go to get one of these from any one of the secretaries of state of the several states, they will give you a certificate of organization for the LLC, or limited liability company, which means that the term partnership includes LLCs. So anytime you see a partnership, you can substitute the LLC in it. The term employee at A20, it's about 125 words long. Till you get down to this little phrase, and it says the term employee shall include a full-time life insurance salesman. All right. So all of you guys out there that thought you were employees, unless you actually sell full-time life insurance, you're not. Or you're some other variant, but that's what it says. All right. So we have We have all that. And everything, or most everything about LLCs is included in this little gem in the Internal Revenue Code of Section 701, which says that a partnership as such shall not include, or shall not be subject to, the income tax imposed in this chapter, period. Which means that limited liability companies are not part of the income tax structure, and it all goes back to that's because they can't partake of the privilege of the activity on which the tax is actually laid, because income is the measure of the tax, not the subject of the tax. So, the way our company does things is we go into, we contract via an application to purchase with a client and settle on a name or two, and then we hand that off to one of our people, and they go to the Secretary of State of New Mexico and make application for a limited liability company. This application is known as the Articles of Organization. The Articles of Organization requires a minimum of two parties. They are the organizer and the registered agent. And here's where it gets fun, because both of those parties can be other limited liability companies. So it doesn't take much thought to see how you can have a limited liability company or LLC that is owned by other LLCs and registered agents of other LLCs and back and forth, so forth. We have built this set of bulwarks four or five layers deep. That is the only that will remain on the public record, because if the if nothing else is filed about the organizer, then the organizer, or about the LLC that was just created, then the organizer is presumed to be the owner. A registered agent must be within the confines of the state of New Mexico, but a registered agent's only job is to receive process. That means in case the limited liability company was sued and process was developed, they could serve it to the registered agent, who would sign for it and then pass it off to the appropriate party. But since this LLC has a registered agent who's an LLC, well, then they have to go back and do paperwork and come back out and so forth and so on. So unlike Nevada, Delaware, and possibly Wyoming, on their applications to incorporate or organize, there must be people on it, and that is referred to as the nominee list. Okay? Now, those states protect that nominee list, but it exists. In New Mexico, it does not exist, just a bunch of LLCs, and that which does not exist cannot be found. So then we get the certificate of organization back from the Secretary of State of New Mexico, and one of our individual workers goes down to the IRS office virtually, and fills out a application to get an EIN. EIN stands for Employer Identification Number, and it is a form of TIN, Tax Identification Number, of which there are several, one being the Social Security number that you happen to have attached to you at this point. So because this one of our workers has never filed a 1040 U.S. individual income tax return, then they are without the IRS jurisdiction. And literally, IRS cannot talk to them about anything about taxes. So we fire up the computer, get on the line, go to the IRS website, start filling out all the pieces of the application. And then we come down to this question that says, why is the LLC requesting an EIN? Well, that would be, there's about five things there, and but we always choose the middle one, and it says banking purposes. Subheading says, select this option if the reason for applying for the EIN is strictly to satisfy banking requirements or local law. Did you hear anything about taxes there? No, because they know that 701 when read properly, says the limited liability company, as such, shall not be subject to the income tax imposed in this chapter, which happens to be Chapter 1, and where most income taxes are imposed. Here again, the income is the measure of the tax, not the subject. Upon receiving the EIN, the worker brings it all back to the office, and on the IRS paperwork on that day, that individual worker is shown as the sole member of the limited liability company. That sole member holds a meeting of the members and creates a resolution commissioning another human as a manager of the LLC. Now, manager is the only officer in an LLC. Corporations have president, CFO, directors, and such. Partnerships, statutory partnerships, have limited partners and general partners. But a manager is the only officer of an LLC. However, the company can have as many managers as it wishes. And the membership, which is the owners of the LLC, where you have shareholders or stockholders or owners of corporation, the membership is the members own percentages of membership. But you can take that out to 4 or 5 decimal points, so therefore you can have as many different members as the company wishes as well. So the manager, who is just commissioned, takes those three pieces of paper, which are their certificate of organization, the EIN letter, which is usually called a CP-575, I believe, and his letter or his commission, which is also known as the letter of authority, goes down to a local bank and gets the brand new company a checking account, which comes with a debit card, which does not have a human's name on it. It only has titles, manager, and it's got electronic banking and everything. So it's the full bells and whistles. Then we bring it all back to the office, and the person that went and got the EIN then transfers the ownership of the company from themselves as sole member back to our base company. We have two of these, both of which are LLCs. One is headquartered in Alamogordo, New Mexico. The other is headquartered in Raton, New Mexico, on either end of the state. And that's the way we keep things going. So hands it off to the back office folks, and they hook up a pay-as-you-go cell phone. Here again, the reason we're doing all this is for the anonymity and privacy of the client, because this is a brand new thing. It's totally independent of any of the client or anybody else's circumstances, and it is not subject to income tax, and it will stay that way as much as we had to say. Now, there are ways of taking it out of that status, but we highly recommend you don't do that. So we get this pay-as-you-go cell phone, and we add the electronic banking for the bank and Square App and Cash App. Square App is a point-of-sale app. So once it's fired up, the new company can take debit cards and credit card payments for its products and or services. And then the Cash App is a nice peer-to-peer thing, which Square App can be further fleshed out to have a debit card and a checking account for the company. And then Cash App can also be fleshed out to have a debit card and a checking account. So by the end of this fleshing out period, if you will, the new LLC can have three checking accounts, three separate debit cards, all interconnected, and the client's name is nowhere on any of it. So then we box all this up, make sure it works, and then we ship it out to the client. It literally comes in a box. So you open up this business in a box and fire up the cell phone, and you can then do all the business that you want worldwide, income tax free. Not a bad deal, right? So some of the other things that you can be doing with these LLCs, once it gets in hand, that's considered a small business. At that point, it's only one person in the business. Now, that can be carried on, but it can be enlarged as far as you want it to go. I believe you may have heard of the name Dalmer Chrysler. Dalmer Chrysler is an LLC, so something that big, but it's all based on exactly the same thing that we just expressed. So you have small business that can be used to large business. Now we can go to a complex business setup where you can have a performer like a dentist who has a practice, and instead of being fully exposed, he has medical malpractice insurance, and so that protects him. But he's got the building that he works in, he's got the equipment that he uses to do the job, he's got the people that support the operation, and each of those can be owned, the equipment, the separate building, and the people working under it can be owned by another LLC, and they rent their services to the practice. So if a dentist was sued and his practice had a judgment against it, they could only get basically what the malpractice insurance would pay. They couldn't take the building. They couldn't take the equipment because those are all owned by somebody else, being other LLCs. And now you have what's known as a judgment-proof situation. Another really nice thing about these limited liability companies that we build is estate planning. So we'll say the client has a house and a car and a boat. And so they're getting to a point in life where they're looking at being able to pass on these assets. And so the assets can be placed, they can be retitled in the LLC's name, and then the beneficiaries, typically children, but not necessarily, can then be given a commission, a manager commission, a letter of authority, and then with instructions so that on the demise and or incapacitation of the client, then the beneficiaries with their management, they just pick up the business and keep going and either use and or dispose of the assets as they are directed to do. So that's a real quick and dirty on estate planning. Of course, if it's more complex, then we just work through all this. So most people in America are what's known as a W-2 employee, which means that they get a form W-2 at the end of the year, one sent to them and one sent to the IRS, stating how much income they have. And of course, everybody believes that the tax is on income rather than the truth that the income is the measure. And so that W-2 employee situation is done by a contract. So you have, we'll just use the example of Joe, who works for IBM. And so he's been working there. He does a good job, and they pay him really well. We're going to say they pay him $100,000 a year. So he learns about this, that the tax is really not on income. Income is the measure. And he gets one of our LLCs, and then he goes to his boss and says, "Hey, boss, how would you like to cut your labor costs for me by 25% and take all the paperwork that you're doing now down to one form once a year?" Well, that saving 25% on labor costs will get a business owner or business manager get their ears up really quickly. And so this is based on what's called the burden rate. Without going into great detail, the burden rate is approximately 1.5 to 1.6 times the salary. So in our example, Joe's making $100,000, and then so it's costing IBM in this case $160,000 in bottom line cost. So he goes to the boss and says, "Hey, how would you like to earn 25%?" Boss says, "Tell me more." And he says, "Okay, well, you're paying me $100,000, and then you got to do all this paperwork with taxes and dot dot dot. And then, you know, and I know that it's costing your bottom line $160,000. So what I'm suggesting is we're going to take me out of this equation of the employer-employee situation. We're going to substitute in this limited liability company. So the contract for my services will now be between IBM and the limited liability company. Then IBM only has to, and, you know, instead of writing, you know, bi-monthly checks for $4,272, then you're only going to write one check to the limited liability company for $10,000. So at the end of the year, you will have paid out $120,000 instead of the $160,000 that you're paying now. And you only have to do one form, which is a 1099, which one copy of that will go to the limited liability company, one copy will go to the IRS, and the IRS and the limited liability company will work it out. And the limited liability company will take care of everything that HR is now doing with benefits and taxes and dot, dot, dot. So that's a quick and dirty thing. Because remember this, if you don't remember anything else about this presentation, all business is contract. And all contract is negotiable. And the contract makes the law in that situation. All business is contract. All contract is negotiable. And the contract makes the law in that situation. So that being said, that's so quick and dirty. And just so you'll understand Michael's comment a little bit more, if you've been on this call before, you know about the charitable religious trust and that sort of thing that's offered, which are great. But if you go into a Bank of America or any other bank and say, hey, I want to get a checking account for my trust, they kind of look at you sideways because there's been a lot of disinformation and bad press for own trust and people don't really understand them and so forth and so forth. But everybody understands the limited liability company in the business world. And so we've taken to calling it a commercial interface. So you could get a couple of CRTs and they would be instituted as 50% owners, each 50% owners of the limited liability company. And then the limited liability company is the interface between the trust and the bank and the rest of the business world. So that's a little bit on how to imagine what this thing. But as I said, Dalmer Chrysler is an LLC, so this thing can be taken up to the farthest extent of your imagination. What are your questions?
Start you.
Anybody out there?
All right. No, I had to mute myself here. And Martin has got his bicycle wheels on, so we're in training here for this. Let's just okay. So let us let me get over here to the right page. Here we go. So hi, Norm. Norman already knows the routine here. He's got his hand raised. Just let me give this for everyone. We have a few new students here or potential students on the call. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2. To raise your hand. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice that in the center right of your monitor, there is a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty. Left-click inside of that rectangle laying on its side and type away your comment or your question. Underneath that rectangle, you will see a place to put your name and some other information if you like, and then hit submit. When you hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I get to read and give voice to what you commented or questioned. So let us start with Norm as our first questioner, and we'll go from there. Go ahead, Norm.
Good evening. I have a unique situation that's in the planning stages, and let me explain what it is. I'm a retired pilot, and I'm partnering with another fellow who is also a pilot. And we are jointly going to create a company called SimPilot, which is a simulator training company. And he currently has a C corporation and plans to keep that C corporation. And he's going to grant me 49% of that C corp, which I want to integrate into an LLC. And my question is, how do I do that? Now, I also have CRTs, but they're not going to come into it at this point in time. Go ahead.
Okay, so you're only talking about the C Corp is a designation under the Internal Revenue Code. It is a corporation that has only one member. It's called a corporation sole, S-O-L-E. And the other, the form with more than one member is called a corporation aggregate, is the full name. So if this gentleman is set on doing that, it that way, God bless him, because he's just going to reap a whole lot of tax problems with that, or taxes required. So,
yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
He's set on that. He wants to keep the C Corp.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. No worries. I'm just setting up my answer. So instead of him handing you 49% of the shares of the corporation, he will hand the LLC the shares of the corporation. So what that will mean is that, and you will be. One thing I forgot to say about when you get the box is you also get a manager's commission from one of to whatever the LLC is we build for you. So as the manager of limited liability company, you are the hands and the feet of it. And so that the aircraft simulation company would, if it were to pay dividends, then it would pay those two. The check would be in the LLC's name, and it would be obviously deposited in one of the checking accounts for it, for the LLC, right? And that's where it ends. The corporation would, on its books, show that the LLC received X amount of dollars as dividends and or whatever other disbursements that it might come up with. And it was, and I believe that, that's probably either a K-1 or a 1099, 1098. I don't know. There's a bunch of them out there. But all this is called third-party reporting because in this world, the IRS is the first party, the taxpayer is the second party, and the third party is the people that hand the taxpayer money. And so if they're third-party reporting, such as 1099s, 1098s, K-1s, 1065s, and so on and so forth, all go to there. When the IRS receives a 1099 with one of our limited liability companies, EIN, on it, they go, oh, that's nice, and they drop it in the trash can because they have no place to settle it with because of Section 701 of the Internal Revenue Code. So that's a quick and dirty way. Our product cost $7,500. And then we have what's called a follow-on, which is called a hotline services. Now, hotline services, one of the main things that it does is integration phase. So all of these different details and stuff setting up where you bring in our product, which we call a private firm from the Supreme Court case Flint v. Stone Tracy in 1910, the private firm, which is based on the limited liability company, it has no tax liability, and so it doesn't have to keep receipts. It doesn't have to, you know, keep books or whatever. It doesn't have to. But that limited liability
is
a private firm. Go ahead.
That's the LLC that doesn't have to keep receipts?
It's true, because it's not subject to the income tax.
Oh.
So
okay.
Let's see, where was I? So the business goes on under the C Corp and everything, and then the limited liability company receives payment, but it's non-taxable. But it still gets to keep the money. And I don't know where else I was going with that. But anyhow, the point is the label that we put on this integration of this brand new business model with whatever business model, whatever you're doing now is your business model, and this is a whole brand new one. So that integration falls under our hotline services. The hotline services are free for the first year, and then It is a $500 per year subscription thereafter. Subscription means it is optional. However, if you don't continue the subscription and then you call back into the office at our 1-800 number and go, hey, what about so-and-so? I need this done, that done, whatever it may be. And they go, okay, great, but you didn't pay your subscription, so this will now be $500 per hour, first hour up front. So that's kind of like a, yeah, probably want to keep that in vogue. So that's the quick of it. Go ahead.
All right. Now, my question one, the LLC files a 1065, which is basically a partner-type return.
No. What does 701 say? Section 701. LLC is not subject to the income tax. It's not subject. It doesn't have to file anything. It doesn't have to talk to anybody. IRS can knock on the door all along and just ignore them because it's not subject. It doesn't have to keep books. We suggest you do because if you build a business up and wish to sell it, the books will show the value of the company. But the 1065 is not necessary because the LLC is not subject to the income tax. Go ahead.
What does the LLC have to file with the IRS?
Nothing.
On an annual basis?
Nothing. Don't have to talk to the IRS at all. In fact, in the legislation from New Mexico, the limited liabilities company are exempt from reporting. That means they don't have to talk to nobody, no when, no how. Go ahead.
Okay. In addition to the business, the LLC is being a, you might say, a partner in the SimPilot. It's also going to manage your own a laundromat business. So I want to incorporate that also into the LLC. How is that done? A separate company, separate.
Okay. So, depending on how judgment proof you want to be. All right. So if we'll just use the single building laundromat as an example, because that's what you asked about. So in that business, you have the building, you have the washers and dryers and whatever other, you know, the coin return and all that, those things. And then you have some body that folds clothes and checks on the washers and dryers. And, you know, so you got a worker in there. We'll just use those three pieces. So it can go under the original limited liability company that we built, or you could build multiple ones, or we would build multiple ones. They would not all cost $7,500. I mean, depending on the complexity and stuff, it'd be $7,500 for the initial package and roughly $1,000 or so for each other LLCs to be organized and get them a checking account, so forth and so on. And so then your building could be titled under one. The machines themselves could be titled under a second one, and then the worker could be working for the third one, and they would be all interactive in renting things to everything. So if the business, you know, somebody slipped and fell, you know, common thing, and then they were to sue the business, well, the business doesn't really have anything to take because all of the pieces are subbed out, if you will. Does that answer your question?
Yes. What was I going to say or ask? So all the laundromat would actually be separate from the primary business I ask about then. They will have its own LLC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And here again, this is all detail. But you always have to do what's called a risk to reward matrix. All right, you got to run the numbers. So I want a laundromat, you know, and it's going to generate $10,000 a month for fun. All right, so that's $120,000 a year, and you know my machines cost me $75,000 total, and the building costs $250,000. So you have these costs of these different assets, and so you, by titling them under separate LLCs, you protect them. And so even if the slip and faller were to get a judgment against the business, then, and by the way, making a judgment or making a case against a limited liability company is exceedingly hard. Okay. So, and especially when it's built like ours is built, where it's owned by an LLC, who's owned by an LLC, who's owned by an LLC. And that's all on the public record of the state of New Mexico. Therefore, you have to run these numbers and figure out, okay, this is what I'm risking, this is what my reward can be, and this is how I mitigate any loss or damage to that reward. What else?
Okay. Next question. Where are you physically located?
We have offices in North Carolina, Western North Carolina primarily, and New Mexico.
Okay. Now I'm in South Florida, Hollywood, Florida. Okay.
Good for you.
All right. And so we can meet by Zoom or something like that, not a physical meeting as necessary, and give you all the details, and you take it from there and work it out, get all the LLCs created, et cetera, et cetera. Is that pretty much the way it would go?
Yep.
Now you call the 1-800-625-4250. Yeah, you call the 1-800 number. 1-800-625-4250. Set up a conference call.
Let me do that. 800, say again the number, 800.
625-4250.
Or you can just call me directly if you have my phone number.
Yeah, I do. Okay. That sounds good. So $7,500 for the first LLC, and would you say $1,500 for everything after that?
Well, it'll depend on the number. We can get them down to $1,500 or so. Here again, this is all details. We have to do the risk to reward maintenance matrix rather to figure out what you want to do. And then once we have an adage around our company, it says, if you can tell us exactly what you want, we can tell you how to get it. So that's what we operate on.
Okay. Sounds good to me. And I think you've answered my questions, so I'm out.
Bye-bye.
Copy that.
No,
right,
just hang on here and listen.
Sure. Thank you. Good to have you, Norm. Appreciate you. Next on the call is Edward from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hello. I was understanding that this thing will cover us in taxes. We will not have to pay taxes. Would this include state taxes too?
Yes. In the presentation, I talked about estate planning. So what you do is you title all your assets underneath the limited liability company, and then you make instead of the beneficiaries receiving a will, they get a letter of authority, which commissions them to do business under the umbrella, under the name of the limited liability company, so that upon the demise and or incapacitation of the client, then the beneficiaries just pick up and continue on doing business and operate the assets and or dispose of them as is directed in the management agreement. Does that answer your question?
That surely does. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Let's see. If anybody else, press star 2. Otherwise, we're going to have an early evening tonight. Let me check Freedom's Radio while you're thinking about pressing what? Star 2 underneath the number 7 on your keypad. Let me hit refresh here at Freedom's Radio. Nope, no other questions there. And Michael in Las Wages, Nevada. Go ahead.
Yes. What is the income is a measure of the tax? What is it measured against?
According to the Revenue Act of 1909, which was put into law on August 5th, it created the first post 16th Amendment taxes on income. That reads, I'm paraphrasing here, that it is hereby imposed an excise tax, and excises can only be on activities. there is hereby imposed an excise tax upon income with respect to doing business in the corporate capacity. All right. So the even though it says on income, the income is the measure, and this was fleshed out in Flint v. Stone Tracy and Stratton Independence, two Supreme Court cases. So the that little phrase with respect to means the subject of the tax is doing business in the corporate capacity. And then so that was settled by Flint v. Stone Tracy. So when they rewrote it in rewrote the income tax laws in 1913, they got to leave off the excise piece and they got to leave off the with respect to. And so there's here they said that, you know, the Congress shall lay and collect taxes upon income of individuals and corporations and so forth and so on. And we know this because that with respect to line shows back up in 1935 when they made a separate taxes on income, which is now known as the FICA or, I can't think of it now. Let's see, Federal Income Tax Contribution Act, FICA, FICA. So that's the subject of the tax is doing business in corporate capacity because it's a privilege, because the Congress can't tax somebody something that is required for life. And having property like food is necessary for life. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, let's check again. That's it, Michael. You usually get some more in there for us. But
I'm tired tonight. I spent 7 hours on a computer.
You did. Why don't you try sitting on a chair next time? It's more comfortable.
Yeah, that might help.
All right. And let anybody else press star 2. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight. And I'm sure that that's not what we want. But maybe that is. Mr. Slevin, any parting words for us tonight? I have some.
Y'all have a bodacious day.
Okay. Here are my parting words. This is the most awesome LLC that you could ever hope to have. Not only does it do the things that Mr. Slevin spoke about, but it hits, it deals hand in glove with the golden horseshoe that Justice Beshear has built. So what it enables you to do, Mr. Slevin's product works fine on its own. That's not good enough for me. Bear with me. Add to that, instead of myself coming in buying the LLC, I have two charitable religious trusts, which the IRS already recognizes non-taxpayers. Have them be 50-50 owners of the LLC with me as the trustee to these two trusts. Then, at a time in the future when business is really good, and I've also corrected my status as the trustee. I'm also a, quote, non-taxpayer. So there's three levels of protection there. Then you put them, you insert this thing into the golden horseshoe. So you have two foreign grantor trusts that could be taxpayers, except they acknowledge to the IRS, if there were any filings, and they're not, they would have acknowledged the IRS that they forwarded those funds to the parent foreign grantor trust, that forwarded the funds to the Private Interest Foundation in Panama, then that forward funds into the corporation's soul. I've just listed six different stop gaps that are all non-taxpayers. Not a one of them is a taxpayer. Only one of them could be marginalized a taxpayer, but when those two foreign grantor trusts forwarded any revenue to the parent foreign grantor trust, that was stripped in law. So this is a win-win all the way around, and I hope that you seriously consider it. And those of you on the call that are post global currency reset, RV, whatever you want to call it, those of you that are prepared to or going to go into some sort of commerce that you've been dreaming about doing, this is the way to arrange your affairs. Okay? So with that having been said, I want to thank everyone tonight. Mr. Slevin, thank you for hosting us tonight. Michaelson, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And we're going to return again tomorrow night. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.